Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
The champions of wilderness are changing in a lot of interesting ways, as the old backpacking granola crunchers give rise to wine-sipping Republican business barons who meet in fancy dining halls with fancy new environmental activists to plan how to protect not only their quality of life, but their profits as well. And in wildness is the preservation of both. We're heading west to talk about wine and wilderness when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wildside News. As we approach the end of summer 2006, there are so many issues that are involved in the environment and about our nation and about our public lands. And sometimes it becomes a little overwhelming that it seems as if we're kind of under siege. But there's an understory to that, and that is the fact that in America, there is also a resurgence of passion to protect this land that is uniting people that typically, prior to this, didn't necessarily naturally come together. At least it's been that way for any number of years. A perfect example of this is happening in Northern California, where there is legislation to set aside a really spectacular wilderness area. And it has brought together residents, business people, corporate interests, activists, hunters and fishermen, and politicians in a most amazing way, and it truly is potentially destined to be a great success story. Someone who's been involved in this for quite some time is our guest now. She's joining us from Northern California, where she actually owns a vineyard. She's a winemaker and also lives there and has a long historic legacy with her family going back for many years. Sally Otteson, I want to welcome you to the Wildside News.
Ah, thank you very much.
Well, Sally, first of all, give us a sense of where you are and how your life happens there.
I'm sitting right on the edge of the ocean at this very moment, looking out over a vast view, I would say 60 miles in each direction, of the wild blue Pacific. And I have a small winery called Pacific Star, and I've been here for about 18 years. I started out in the Napa Valley many years ago. I'm not even going to tell you how many. but I had a winery there for 15 years, and the Napa Valley started to change a lot, and I decided that I wanted to have a simpler perspective of the wine industry, make wine for people and sell it directly to them. And I was able, by a rather circuitous path, to find this beautiful piece of land in my hometown and came home, literally, and brought my career with me.
And the winery is?
Pacific Star. And many people ask me why I named it that, and it always amazes me that the relationship isn't clear. The Pacific is about 200 feet from the cellar door, and stars I've always been fascinated by. I think they're just a happy symbol. They have certainly spiritual meaning, but also people are enchanted by stars. And the Milky Way passes overhead at night here without any interference from cities at all. I'm 12 miles north of Fort Bragg and 25 miles north of Mendocino, and many people across the country are familiar with the village of Mendocino because it is a historical town.
Right, and the Milky Way, for those when you have the opportunity to see it from a pristine area, is quite a sensation that many people don't have any access to visually because of where they live. So,
I believe the statistic is something like 46% of the world's population can't see the stars.
Right. Oh, my. Well, you're very lucky. You're very lucky, but you've also worked hard, I'm sure, to get to where you are. You come from a family that has a very deep connection with the earth, and I'm just curious to what degree you feel that has affected your commitment to nature, to wild places, and specifically to this wilderness effort.
I have a natural commitment to preserving wild places. My family homesteaded in the northern coastal area in 1863, both sides of my family. My mother's family is Finnish and my father's is Danish, and they came because of the Homestead Act, which passed in 1862, and they arrived in 1863 after having spent some time in Australia waiting for the quota to allow them to enter the country. And my father's family was, they were the first settlers in a very remote place, which is about 15 miles inland. So if you can imagine having come from comfort to a completely wild place with nothing but your own capabilities to set up home and provide for your family.
For many people, of course, in the West, that's exactly what they had to do. But I think very few people can even begin to appreciate what that really meant, to be on your own and to rely on the earth for your sustenance and literally your survival. I imagine that you've heard many stories.
Well, my parents are now in their 80s. We still spend all of our available time in the wilderness. My family has a cabin way up in the mountains about 6 hours away from my home. And there's no electricity. The animals are tame. We pick berries. We make jam. We here in Fort Bragg, where my parents live, we can albacore every year. Traditionally, we can salmon. My father still hunts. We have lived off the land for our entire lives, and not because we don't have access to cultivated food, certainly, but because we choose that way of living. It's being very close to the land. It gets you out in it. And that's really the basis of my passion for the Wilderness Act. I got into it in kind of an unusual way. I was doing a wine tasting in Washington, D.C. for my congressman, Mike Thompson, who started the wine caucus, and he put together a bipartisan group to have wine tastings and brought in vendors from his district, which encompasses Napa, Sonoma, and Mendocino. And I was there doing that, and when it was over, there was a huge crowd outside the congressional building waiting for taxis, and I was offered a ride in a taxi with a young gentleman, and of course I took it, and in our ride, we were talking about my occupation and his, and he mentioned to me that he was involved in a group called Wild Vintage and organizing it for the Wild Heritage Act, and we both knew Mike Thompson, so it was a natural conversation. And he, his name is Mike McWilliams. In fact, he was here yesterday at the winery visiting, and he got me involved in it just because of that taxi ride.
It's amazing how those things come together. Sometimes it seems as if they're meant to happen. I always say thank you when they happen. They're gifts. This wine caucus, let's reach out a little bit here now, because really that begins to define some of the impetus for the coming together, the coalition to protect this area of Northern California. A lot of vintners have come together to really support the Northern California Coastal Wild Heritage Wilderness Act. First of all, talk about what that is. What is the Northern California Coastal Wild Heritage Wilderness Act?
Mike Thompson and Senator Boxer and Senator Dianne Feinstein have all spearheaded the Wild Heritage Wilderness Act, which encompasses many beautiful places in California. There are many groups who've come together to individually support and as a coalition support this act. It's bipartisan. It's unanimous in its support. It has, as you know, passed the House recently unanimously. There's a version that has passed the Senate unanimously. It is now going to be compiled as one bill and put on President Bush's desk, and should be signed within a few weeks. We're so happily anticipating it actually becoming wilderness designation. The area that I'm particularly interested in is an area that I look at out of my kitchen window. It's called the Lost Coast, and it also encompasses the King Range and Mount Lassic and a vast wilderness area, very diverse in nature. And the Lost Coast has 100 miles of untouched, unspoiled, roadless area that I believe absolutely has to be preserved. It is the only area of its kind left in California. It is relatively inaccessible and has been in conservation designation, which is almost no protection at all. It has only one road into it from the north and one from the south, and it will now remain unspoiled because of the effort of all of these different groups. Now, there are hunters, there are fishermen, there are mountain bikers, there are vintners. We're only a piece of the coalition that is working to preserve this area.
How has it been that that has remained so protected at this point?
Just about 15 miles north of my winery, the coastal highway goes inland. Of course, it starts where you are down in San Diego and is called the Pacific Coast Highway. As it comes north through our area, it becomes the Redwood Highway, and it abruptly turns inland at just north of Rockport. That came about because as they were building the original road, they did intend to go through the Lost Coast, but when they started bulldozing and trying to construct a road, it very quickly eroded around them, and they realized that it was just too, there was too much movement there, and they abandoned the idea, and it became inaccessible because it was privately owned originally, and there was only one dirt road into it, and to this day, there is still only one dirt road in on the south side. It's called the Usall Road, and you can't pass a car. You have to pull over if a car comes the other direction. Mm-hmm. So it's treacherous. It takes about an hour to get all the way to the ocean, and once you get out there, you see how the cliffs are eroding. You're about 1,000 feet above the ocean when you stand on the edge. Mm-hmm.
The effort to bring this about really has involved a lot of people who have come together with a variety of different values. Let's talk about that coalition and the diversity of values that have come together and how they've overlapped. I'm sure you could speak to that.
There were opposing uses in the people who were interested in this area and came forth and discussed the bill. There were some adjustments made to the acreage to satisfy some of the needs of people who already use it. And some of those questions were about logging, timber use, new roads, the use of mountain bikes, the roads and paths that are there. And the effort was made to satisfy everyone, and I think it's been done because there is a way to do that. The area is so vast and it is so beautiful that everyone feels passion for it, and for once it wasn't contentious. It was simple because we all want to celebrate and appreciate the power and beauty of a place like this.
Now, how long has it taken to bring about this legislation? How long does this go back?
I've been involved for 4 years. I believe it's been just over 4 years, possibly five.
And it's been quite a success story in terms of the wilderness legacy, that over that four-year period there has been this process of inclusion and bringing people together and talking. I don't know who's led this effort, but somehow there's been a gentle hand that has carried this through. What would you say has really been sort of the central theme that has united people from these diverse interests?
I think everyone realizes that this particular area, and I'm not speaking about the other parts of the bill, although I'm very familiar with their locations and their particular assets and the need to preserve them as well. But this particular area is of great value to me because I look at it every day and I think to myself, look what can be done by enough people who care, enough people who really can stand on something that we have worked to preserve. The wine industry specifically I can speak to because I've been in it for over 30 years. We all work very hard. Physically, we work hard, and to run small businesses is very difficult, as most people know. But in our free time, we go north. We go to find those quiet places where we can fish, we can hunt, we can get out in nature and have a different experience than our day-to-day life, which is very involved with people and managing people and our customer base and spending, you know, 24 hours a day working at our job. After all, we make the product and then we sell the product.
Well, now also there's this the aspect just from the business perspective that if your area there began to be developed in the ways that it's, you know, seems to be happening everywhere, broken up into small parcels, that the wine industry in particular is dependent upon, to a large extent, the tourism. The tourism and the wineries work together. And I know that there was a concern that if the natural beauty were taken away, this could impact the success of the vintners and the wineries. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, my winery is open 7 days a week, and I have a very beautiful place for people to come and picnic and sit by the ocean and enjoy it. Because I lived in the Napa Valley, where I felt that everything truly beautiful was behind locked gates, I felt very strongly when I got my property that I wanted it to be open to the public. And I find, as I sit and speak with my customers, that they're all fascinated and passionate about the beauty of the land and the beauty of nature. And I feel that I have an opportunity to lead people into it and show them that it's accessible, that all you have to do is drive up the road and yeah, you're going to get a little dirt on your car, but you can get out there and you can feel it for yourself. And that's why there's a connection between my business and preserving it, because I have a chance to talk to thousands of people every year. And I can say to them, look, it's not inaccessible. It's there for you, too. It belongs to you. And go out and see how it feels.
This is truly a success story, and it really celebrates what people can do who are committed to taking care of their backyard. People do have the power to really demand that their land and their vistas and their wonder is preserved. You've done a great job in bringing this about. Congratulations.
So I'm just a little tiny piece, just one person. And the interesting thing about this area is it really doesn't have a human footprint. There were never, I'm sure that American Indians lived there many years ago, and there is evidence of that, but people didn't use the land. It was always wild, and the evidence of that is still there. And I think that's one of the things that we're all able to enjoy now.
Let's go a little deeper now on a personal level. Because I believe that the connection with nature and the wonder and the wild is a very deep and personal thing. And sometimes we don't have the opportunity to really talk about that. But I know that you can. So I'd just like you to go ahead and share your thoughts about what it is about your connection with nature that is so significant to you.
I got my love for nature from my parents. We lived it. My parents are, as I said, Finnish and Danish, and they have stayed with the old ways of preserving foods and hunting, fishing, making wild places and the bounty of those places part of their lives by purpose, not because cultivated foods aren't available to us, but because it's an integral part of our spiritual life as well. It's being outside and watching birds interact and animals interact, and the physical act of gathering food and preserving it. Personally, I can about 200 pounds of albacore every year, and it always coincides with the beginning of harvest, which gets a little hectic, but I keep it under my bed because I don't want anybody to come in and get it. So it's one of my prized possessions.
Now, if you were to lose this way of life, what would happen to you personally?
Well, personally, I'm very fortunate. My great-great-grandmother homesteaded a piece of land way up in the mountains above the Mad River almost 125 years ago, and it has remained in my family. So I have a place to run away to. In fact, I'm leaving tomorrow to go up there. There's no electricity. We have a flush toilet, we have running water, we have a sauna, we have all the necessities and then some, but there's no buzz. And my family has worked very hard to preserve this place in its original state. In fact, my dad took down the old cabins and reframed them and insulated them and put the old shake siding back on, so everything looks original as though it's a museum to my great-grandmother. She raised my grandfather and another son there by herself over 100 years ago. So as you can see, we have a place to go, but I know most people don't, and that's exactly why I have the energy I do for preserving wild places for other people.
the vast majority of people in the United States right now don't have that opportunity to retreat to the degree that you do, and that's why it's so critical that we have these retreats, these places to restore. I know for myself that it's critical to literally touch nature, that something happens. Nature seems to siphon out the toxins that come from stress, and if we're not able to literally touch the earth, things build up, the stresses and the strains, and that is, from my perspective, one of many of the values of nature. But then also you have these beautiful vistas. You're a very lucky person for that. And I guess in terms of preserving wilderness, maintaining those visions of the earth are critical.
I don't consider it mine. I feel like I've been designated the steward of my land, and I hope to be able to continue to pay the mortgage so that I can offer the beauty to other people, as well as my product. Now, I've managed to balance it with my career, and I'm making a product that is reasonably priced and I think wonderful, and I offer it to my customers, so they're paying a little fee to enter this beautiful place, but it's a balance for all of us. And yes, I think there is a feeling of restoration when you're in these beautiful places, and life gets so fast. I see people moving so quickly, and you cannot help but be in awe of the power of the ocean when you're sitting there, and it does make you slow down. It changes time, and you can step back into the fast world and feel a lot better about what you're doing.
Well, Sally Otteson, you've worked hard, and you're creating a great success story. If people want to find out, first of all, more about the Pacific Star Winery, what's the best way for them to do that?
PacificStarWinery.com.
That's easy?
Yes.
And if they want to find Pacific Star Winery, how can they get there?
I have a tasting room in Fort Bragg at 401 Main Street in the Depot Building. And then Pacific Star Winery is 12 miles north of Fort Bragg, right on Highway 1. It's very easy to find. We welcome visitors, so much so that we're there 7 days a week, ready to serve wine and bring your picnic and sit and enjoy the beauty.
Well, I'm going to make my way up there just specifically to do that. Well, Sally Otteson, thank you so much for your work to make this available to the rest of us in terms of helping to set aside this area and preserve it for Americans and the world and all of history. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, too. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye. This special wilderness sampler is just a taste of what's happening in every state in the nation. As Doug Scott made clear, wilderness in America involves legislation, which means that every vote counts. That's fair. But it also means we have to do the work. The good news is the alliances are broadening into a strong consensus of citizens from all walks of life. Thanks for joining us in the wilderness and joining your spirit with all the rest of us who know that in wildness is the preservation of us all. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until we meet again next Thursday or any time on the archives, when the voices of the earth reach around the world, here on the Wild Side News.